Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Tool Shed. Season 4, just our second episode here. Logan Carney, returning host with the new co-host and our new basketball experts here at RV Century Media, Austin Beckhold. Said that right again? I think I messed it up last week, so I just want to double check. Oh, I have you muted.
You have me muted, Logan.
It's still early in the year.
Yeah.
Still early in the year.
Just like my takes from last week, I was saying Beckhold is it, but it's all right. You're good.
And Nick Hedrick, our sports editor here
Hello.
At Century.
Hello. How are we doing?
We are doing fine.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Good to hear.
I'm glad to be on the Tool Shed. You know, you always hear about it. Well, I'm sure people at home don't always hear about it, but you know, in the Century Media organization, you hear about the Tool Shed.
Logan loves talking about
all the greats that have paved this path, like Matt Kurdick, and so many others have made this possible for me to be here today. So I'll try to honor them.
That's right. You weren't on the episode last week. That's right.
No, I was not. I was going to Erie, where I live.
Las Vegas of the East.
Unfortunately, so their lights could fall down out of the sky, and there was no hockey game.
But anyway, we got a big show today planned. Possibly our last one of the semester. I know it's only our second one, but you know, we started towards the end of the semester, so we'll cut us some slack here. But possibly the last one of the semester. Big news today is yesterday really dropping that DJ Russell, one of the big transfers for the Rebel Morse men's basketball team, JUCO transfer specifically, will be transferring from Robert Morris. With reports indicating from, I believe it was Pittsburgh Sports Now that reported that the reasoning is unhappy with his role in playing time. So, initial reactions, guys. Austin, we'll just jump right in. Austin, initial reactions, and then we'll dive more into this topic. But initial reactions from the news today.
I mean, three transfers coming in. It makes sense that someone's not going to play. Someone's not going to be happy with the role, and it ends up being Russell. He was one of the top 50 JUCO transfers in the country. Bigger guy, but just like you said, did not like his role. But who's he going to start over? I mean, that's honestly the problem that I look at with this team. Now, the team's not doing very well. Maybe you switch up the lineup a little bit, but I think Toole's been more willing to stick with his guys and try to see if they can figure it out themselves, and Russell was just not a part of it.
Nick, your initial reactions on the news about Russell's transfer. You think how much does this hurt the team?
Well,
do you think in your eyes?
My initial reaction is I was trying to write this article and get it up, and I almost made the slug twice. Just I'm trying so hard to get it out. But like Austin said, it's just one of those things. You know, he's new to the system, new to the program. I'm not sure who he thought he was going to start over. There's three transfers, as you mentioned as well. I think you need to give something like that time and make the most out of the time you do get, and eventually you'll see those minutes increase, and I don't think he gave himself a chance to do that by immediately entering the transfer portal here. And he's already off the roster, so they're wiping his name clean off of everything RMU basketball related.
Yeah, all right, DJ Russell, one of the top 50 JUCO transfers in the country last year, not just you know, in this for a small school like Robert Morris, a big get for any school, any program, transferring from Robert Morris, very shocking. It's interesting to see just the reasoning why. I know, like you said, like because we look at this lineup. I'm gonna pull up their most commonly used lineups here. The most commonly used, and the depth chart of their past five games has seen Tracy, John Williams, Josh Williams, A.J. Berham, and Giannis Mendy. Berham starting at the forward position, likely where D.J. Russell would have started. Now, D.J. Russell only used 6% of the time in the last five games. So maybe it's not so much just not starting. Maybe it's not so much, you know, getting, you know, basically any playing time over at the last five games over the year. For D.J. Russell, the second least used player on the roster, or in terms of possessions used, but of course, you know, possessions used, the number one, the lowest is John Williams, who plays 73% of the game, just isn't the scorer on the team, but only playing about 25% of the minutes of each game, the second lowest out of a lot of the players that are used. Let me just count right here, the nine players that the Colonials have been using pretty extensively over the year. But still, I mean, to me, it's an interesting, I think it's a loss. I don't think they've really used him a lot this year. obviously. So I don't think it's as big as a loss it is. But this was one of the guys that highlighted the recruiting class that you brought in. They brought in three very good JUCO transfers, AJ Braham, DJ Russell, and Jalen Hawkins. Three very good JUCO transfers that they brought in, and now one of them is leaving. So I think going forward, I mean, but looking at it, you know, if you were to start Russell, where would you start him? I mean, you wouldn't start him over Josh Williams.
No.
So would you start him over Braham, or would you try and move him or Braham to center at the five position and take out Mendy?
I don't know. Maybe over Braham. I don't know. I just don't think that Russell's production was going to be the same. Obviously, we didn't really get to see what it could be, and now we won't. But I think Braham probably the only other option. Because you're not taking Josh Williams off the floor.
No, you're not taking Josh Williams. He's the best scorer on the team that they have right now. Of course, I mean, you know, Jalen Hawkins and Savon McGowan have been playing very well. But Josh Williams is your go-to guy, you know, the three-point record holder. He's not somebody that you're not going to start. Of the year, still leads second in the team in three-point percentage behind McGowan, who's been very well, very good off the bench this year for them, with 32.5. Of course, McGowan just 17 threes, Josh Williams 80 threes, so a lot more of a sample size for Williams. So my question to you, Nick, about this is does this say anything about Coach Toll? Because, you know, something that we've noticed in issues in his past, and for those of the, you know, repeat listeners of the shows, you know, this was something that former co-host Matt Curtick would bring up a lot, is that a lot of players seem to transfer out of Robert Morris. Well, this is a guy that transferred into Robert Morris and is leaving, you know, 2 months into the season. So does this say anything about Coach Toll? And does, you know, is he able to retain the guys that he brings in?
I'm writing the article for it right now, so I'm trying to get my wits about me, my thoughts about my pick. But, you know, Chris Coleman and Kobe Thomas both transferred over the offseason. Kobe Thomas might have been one of the best players on that team. There might have been an attitude problem. We're not sure. But it's hard to blame. Is that tool or is that, you know, personnel problems, like players thinking they're better than they are? You know, I think basketball is a sport fueled by ego. And obviously, I think Kobe Thomas last year especially was upset with his role on the team. And I think Russell obviously is upset with his role on the team.
But Kobe Thomas played the whole year, though. He still
stayed
with the team the whole year.
Yes, he stayed with the team. I have heard offhand stories about their relationship between Toole and Thomas from people that saw practices and stuff. But you have to question his Toole problem because, I mean, it seems like every year there's at least one transfer or so, which I'm not going to pretend I know how many times people transfer out of programs. I feel like one to two players a year obviously is worrisome. But
does it say something about Toll, or do you think this is more about Coach Toll, or do you think it's more about just the small program? I mean, in this case, it's not about the small program losing somebody to jump up, but a lot of those players that, you know, we bring up have transferred, have left to go to, you know, Clemson, for example.
Yeah.
The bigger, much bigger and better programs, you know? So how much of it, you know, in this case, it's different, but overall, when looking at the body of the work, does this start thinking, okay, maybe it's not just players wanting to go to a better program? Maybe that there's some issues with this coaching staff?
I mean, yeah, that's obviously a thought. Kobe Thomas goes to, I'm not even sure, it was Coppin State now. So, I mean, it really, it's one of those things that we don't know. We can only speculate. I mean, we don't know, are they transferring to go to bigger programs? Are they transferring because they're unhappy with this or that? I mean, I'm sorry, I'm all over the place. I'm trying to write this article.
Well, I think in Russell's case, it's a 2-8 team, and you're not seeing any minutes, and you come into this team expecting to see a lot of minutes. There's a lot of frustration, and it's pretty obvious where it stems from.
Well, 2-8, but
they've had a very difficult schedule. They could have beat Marquette if they didn't have that one really bad run in the middle of the second half.
And they didn't look bad in the first half against Pitt. You know, we were at that game.
No, yeah, right. I mean, that Pitt game's not as close as the score indicates, no. And that's funny seeing it was a 14-point game. But, I mean, they've been competitive at least for, you know, decent chunks of the game. And I mean, RMU's a team that those teams bring in, like, you know, the Notre Dames and stuff. Well, that was a tournament, so I guess that's a bad example. But, I mean, RMU's a team that is always going to compete in the NEC. And I think they're a team that, you know, a lot of programs bring in because they know RMU will give them a game, and, you know, it's not going to be an easy pancake game. They're actually going to get tested in and out of conference games.
Well, it should be. It's one of those games where it's an easy win, but it's not one of those ones. It's one where you can actually show, like, what are your strengths and weaknesses if you're one of these teams.
Exactly.
It's a buy-in game that actually has something, you know, good going for the team other than just, you know, having an easy win on the schedule. So, I mean, don't really have to, you know, are talk about replacing the production of Russell because he hasn't done it much this year. But, you know, when we looked at the recruiting class, you know, I for one thought this was one of the better recruiting classes that Coach Toll had during his tenure, at least.
Especially, we were very excited last year because, as we've mentioned, all the JUCO guys were pretty well regarded and held to some high standards. And we thought maybe this team can finally, you know, get closer to that NEC title that in my 2 years here so far, they haven't, you know, really been all that close. They've made some noise, but haven't been super close to being NEC title contenders. We thought this was going to be a really big season for them. But obviously the 2-8 start, regardless of how well they played, is going to mess with your psyche. And, you know, now you have a notable transfer leaving, not even a full month, a day short of being in the program for a full month. So, I mean, that's got to be, you know, bad juju, for lack of a better term, in the minds of everyone involved on that team.
I think it's obvious. I think it's just, you know, points out to it. You know, only 11 players on the roster, so no, the depth, RMU doesn't play many players, so it's not like the depth's going to be that tested. But I do think, you know, it is notable that much or that little amount of time in being in the program. You got to evaluate why are players leaving so frequently, especially with, you know, such a small roster of usually 12 to 13, 14 players, and you're having one or two leave every year. Like, there's got to be a reason for that. That's just not common.
Yeah, the Robert Morris men's basketball team this past weekend, since the last podcast, they've gone 1-3. Now, we mentioned that 66-62 loss on the road at Marquette on Saturday, November 23rd. So we'll talk about that one first, because that's the one that really stands out. Because, I mean, we can talk about their one win, but, I mean, it was against the Geneva, who's not even a Division I school. So it's something that should have happened. Granted, they scored 100 points, which is good. That's what you should do in those games. They didn't play down to their opponent, so that's positive to see. But I think the game that really stands out to all of us, and I hope I'm not, you know, overstepping my bounds when I say that that's the Marquette game that really stands out. Only losing by 4 to one of the better programs in the country right now. Is there anything that stood out to you in that game that you think that is, how important was that just to be, you know, competitive in that game? And does it give you more hope that this team could compete when NEC plays?
That Marquette game was nationally televised as well. So, I mean, again, that's two really big games of brand exposure for the RMU men's basketball program. And, I mean, they could have easily rolled over during that bad run in the second half, where it didn't seem as if Robert Morris could, you know, dribble the ball past half court without, you know, committing a turnover or by a bucket. But, I mean, the resiliency they showed, and to only lose by the, what was it, 2 or 4 points? I can't remember.
Four.
Yeah, it was 4. But to lose by 2 possessions in a game where I believe they were down well over 10 points at certain points in that second half, I think it says a lot about the will and the grit of the team.
Yeah, they had the lead going into halftime, 20-19, 66-62 being the final. I think Dante Tracy just played phenomenal. I watched the game, like you said, was on TV.
Did you turn it on after PSU-OSU finished?
I was flipping back and forth.
Yeah, it was.
That was not.
The remote was too far away, so I got up and changed it once, and then just I didn't bring it over. It was a mistake on my end.
Yeah, 14 points, 2 steals. Just I think his ball handling was phenomenal, and just the pace of play that RMU was trying to play at to be able to match that of Marquette. I think he did a really nice job of being able to do that, and I think it basically showed that they really kept it close. And, you know, that's a hard atmosphere to play at Marquette. Big East school, that's a pretty good team. They're not ranked, but still a good program.
Borderline ranked team
that's a tournament team.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and shout out to the women's team, their first win over Big East school in team history when they beat Xavier, I believe, last weekend.
Shout out to them.
We might as well
give them a shout out. That podcast got to be starting at some point.
You're looking at the wrong guy.
I am looking at the
wrong
guy.
I have enough on my plate.
But, yeah, I mean, the thing that stands out to me looking at these stats for this box score from the game is the just the turnover battle and just how well Robert Morris won that. You know, they only turned the ball over 13 times, and they generated 21 turnovers from Marquette. So that's something that really stands out to me, is just how well Robert Morris won the turnover battle on the road in a Big East school. Very good program. Now, some of the other things, you know, rebounds. Big East team, you're going to have, when you're a Big East team, you're going to have, you know, bigger and stronger guys. That's just natural. Of course, you know, the size, I mean, they have 1 7-footer, a 6'9" player. I mean, a couple, and that's, so it's, you know, a couple inches bigger, but it makes a big difference in basketball. Yet, Robert Morris, they stayed almost one for one in the rebound battle, only 8 less rebounds over as a whole. So really it was, they played very, very well for a team that was physically a lot better than them. And I think that really stands out when you go and take on these teams against, you know, the NEC schools that are the same as you. This is something that I think should give people hope. Now, of course, I believe early in the year, and I have to double check it, Central Connecticut State had a close game against, I just have to double check. I remember early in the year, but so it's not like Robert Morris is the only NEC school that's putting up, that's playing well in these games, but it makes them look like they'll be competitive. And, you know, regardless of losing one of your deaf guys in Russell, it should give people hope, for fans hope. And I was wrong about Central Connecticut State. I forget what school it was. I'd have to double check it. But the Robert Morris team, very, very competitive against that Marquette game. Really the game that stands out. And this Marquette team's a good team. You know, they've played, just counting off of it, 4 Power 5 schools already. You know, they lost, they beat USC, they lost to Maryland, and they lost to Wisconsin, and they beat Purdue. Purdue, who just, you know, blew out in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. Purdue coming off a huge,
dominant
huge
victory,
win against Virginia. That's what I was talking about.
From the tournament.
Yeah, this 29-point victory against Virginia. Marquette beat them. Like, it's a good, for Purdue, lost by 3 points to Florida State. You know, this is a good team. The Marquette has beaten good programs. So the fact that Robert Morris was able to almost, you know, keep it even throughout the entire game, lead at halftime, and all those other things is extremely significant, in my personal opinion.
One thing that I usually look at from games is to see, you know, how the team played, 3-point percentage and free throw percentage. And I look at the game, and RMU against Marquette was 10 of 14 from the line, 71%. That's 4 free throws. That's 4 points. That's the difference in the game. Could have been a tie game at that point. Still, 3-point percentage. First half, not too great. 2 for 10, 20%. Second half, really picked it up. 4 for 9, 44%. So overall, I think the team was – they did pick it up in the second half after being down a significant margin. But I think especially playing a good team, those are just a couple of the little things that you got to be able to – specifically do well. And I think if all, you know, all the free throws go in, it's a tie, it's a different ball game.
I'm looking at some of the stats as the year for Robert Morris, and this goes back to that point of what they did well against Marquette. Their turnover percentage, so they're generating on every 20, about just about 21 possessions per 100, they're generating a turnover, which puts them at 108th in the country. Now, I know 108th isn't this, you know, incredible. It's not top 100. It's right outside. It's not this incredible number, but this is an NEC school.
Right.
You know, they shouldn't be a top 100 in anything, and they're 108th in the country in defense. And that's something that Toll's been very known for in terms of just putting strong defensive teams. Now, the defensive efficiency rating as a whole is 274th in the country right now. Of course, they played tough teams, but the fact that they played tough teams so far, really tough schedule, one of the tougher non-conference schedules for a small school out there, and they have one of the better turnover percentages in the entire country on defense. So that's something that, you know, again, a strong team from Andy Toll's side defensively. Now, of course, teams are shooting very well against them, which is an issue, making almost 60% of their 60% of their baskets, which is an issue.
That's a big issue.
But, you know, 60% of the 2-pointers, I should rephrase that, which is an issue. But again, you know, looking at it as a whole, it looks like another strong defensive team for Robert Morris. But is there anything that stands out to you? What is, you know, 2-8 record, very, very, very tough schedule. What is your general thoughts on the team thus far, Austin?
Thus far, I think it's been growing stages of, you know, trying to get these transfers in, trying to find some more chemistry. Another year for Tracy under his belt. I don't think the team is just meshed yet. I don't think the identity has been found yet, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Communication may be part of the issue, but I think the more and more time, you know, that these guys get to be able to play with each other, it's going to start to work. And I think with lesser competition in NEC play, you're going to start to see, you're going to start to see the players mesh combined, be able to find more offensive production, and it will be helped out on the defensive side.
I'm looking ahead now. They have 3 non-conference games left. They're taking on Florida Gulf Coast tomorrow on the road. Central Michigan, they got home on Tuesday, December 17th. 2 days after my birthday, by the way. Didn't know if you knew that. Just shouting that out there. UNLV on December 21st, a couple days before Festivus.
Christmas.
Enough.
looking at these next 3 games, is there any that stands out that say, you know, one of these games are winnable? I think their next 2 are very winnable at the very least. I think Florida Gulf Coast and Central Michigan are very winnable games. I'm not going to come out and say, because they're both, you know, they're good programs, but are good for competitive with Robert Morris, they'll be. But I think the next 2 games are very winnable. I think if they win both of them and finish year 4 and finish non-conference 4-8, I think that would end up being, you know, the record, but for a school like Robert Morris, I think that's a solid record going into the conference play. Nick, your thoughts?
I agree with the 4-8 thing. I'm not sure if they'll be able to beat Central Michigan. I do think they'll be able to beat Florida Gulf Coast. Florida Gulf Coast wins this year. Are not that impressive. I believe they beat FAU and like Florida Tech or something. And I know a lot of good recruits go to Florida Tech.
And FAU in overtime.
FAU was in overtime as well. So, I mean, those wins obviously aren't that impressive, but then you can almost say the same thing for Robert Morris. I mean, they beat Geneva and Howard, and I believe 57 people went to the Howard game in Howard, so that shows you where their basketball program's at. Nothing against them, though, but I mean, so this Central Michigan game's the one I'm really going to keep my eye on. I think Florida Gulf Coast will be a win, but definitely, hopefully they can reach that 4-8 mark.
Yeah, I agree with everything said there. I think Florida Gulf Coast, just not that great of a team, 2-9 overall. I think that's definitely a game that RMU can go down and win tomorrow. Big game if they can be able to win it. Nice bounce back. But the Central Michigan game, like you said, Nick, that's a good game at home. One of your non-conference games being able to have at home. Central Michigan, a pretty decent team, 6-2. I think if Robert Morris is able to win that, I think it's nice for nice confidence boost. But if they don't, it's understandable against kind of solid team in Central Michigan.
Looking at Central Michigan.
Central Michigan, not to cut you off,
yeah, you're fine,
but I think you're going to say what I'm going to say. And I haven't sounded that smart today because my mind's trying to get this DJ Russell article out. RMU just lost to Youngstown State, and Youngstown State fell to Central Michigan by double digits.
Oh, that wasn't what I was going to say, but it's a good
point. They beat them by 16. So can they beat Central Michigan? Not too confident after noticing that.
Don't know if home court advantage is that great for that, at least.
No, common opponents is, you know, that's a good point. I think looking at, you know, some of the stuff of Central Michigan, though, the battle that stands out to me, like we've been talking about, you know, Robert Moore is very good at generating turnovers. Central Michigan, their offensive turnover percentage is 7th best in the entire country right now, only turning the ball over a little under 15% of the time. Per 100 possessions, 7th best in the entire country. They lost to DePaul, a Big East school, by double digits, by 13. They were competitive in it, and their only other loss is to Minnesota. So they've had 4 games in which they scored over 100 points this year, including a 134 point victory of Mississippi Valley State. They scored 134-78. But the big battle is that Robert Moore's defense that's great at generating turnovers versus that Central Michigan offense that's great at holding on to the ball. And that's really where things will be interesting to see. If Robert Morris can win that turnover battle, then I think they could. then they could win the game. You know, they're very – Central Michigan, a very clean team, just looking at their numbers. You know, they're tops in the country in free throw percentage, top in the – they're number two in non-steal turnovers, which, you know, turn the ball over for something that isn't a steal. They're number two in the entire country in that. So a very, very clean, fundamentally strong team. And it's a tough battle for Robert Morris, but it's also a winnable game. So it's a very interesting test for Robert Morris because, you know, you obviously Marquette's a tougher team. You know, Notre Dame, tougher team. Pitt, tougher team. Those are much tougher teams. But those also really aren't you wouldn't classify those as winnable games. This is a really tough opponent that's also a winnable game. So I think this is the best test to see how Robert Morris does against Central Michigan, just like you guys have been saying. I think would be the best testament as to how they will do going forward. And if they can pull out a victory there, then it looks good for them moving forward. Central Michigan, by the way, will have one more Power 5 team before they take on Robert Morris, and that'll be against Texas. And they actually take on Purdue right after that. So very, very tough opponent for Robert Morris, but it's also a winnable game. So I think that's the game to look out for going forward. So moving on, though. So against UNLV, I guess, you know, they're not a Power 5 team, but still a much bigger program. Do you guys have any thoughts on that one going to Vegas? You think that they can pull out an upset there?
I don't know. The UNLV games so far this season, at least of late, have been pretty close. Their last two games at Cincinnati, they lost in overtime 72-65, and then at Fresno State, that game went to double overtime where they won 81-80. They like to play a lot of their games close. They had a loss at SMU 72-68. Texas State, they lost 64-57.
Loss in California and Kansas State, both in overtime.
So it's a bunch of close, highly contested games, I think.
But those are also much better teams than Robert Morris.
Right. I think that their track record this season has been, 4-6 team overall. You don't really know what you're going to get. I think that does RMU have a chance on the road? I think they have a little bit of a chance, slight chance, but I would not give them the overall edge over UNLV.
Nick, your thoughts? Still working on the article?
No, I'm writing my thesis. The article's about to be done, though, so maybe for the last 5 minutes of the show I can actually pay attention and contribute something worth actually.
Well, we only have a couple minutes left,
Can they beat UNLV? Probably not. That's just me going off the cuff, which has been the majority of this show because I'm a journalist first and a on-air personality second. It's going to be a tough game for them to win. I wish we could go there, but unfortunately, too close to Christmas. Maybe next year we'll have a good trip, and me and Begtolt can go and send you nice pictures.
Out to Vegas. I think that'd be a good trip.
I doubt they'll play them back-to-back years, but maybe.
Looking at the schedule ahead, though, a couple more games before we come back. They'll start conference play, Central Connecticut State and Merrimack. Guys, thoughts on those two? They'll be before break. This might be our last show before break. We could end up doing one next week. Well, that'll be a game-time decision. Thoughts on those two games. How do you think they're going to look going into conference season?
Yeah, two road games at Central Connecticut and at Merrimack, like you were saying, to begin the season in NEC play. I think there's definitely a win in there. I think Merrimack's a definite win. I just don't think Merrimack's that strong, especially being – are they new to NEC play in basketball, too?
In Division I.
Yeah. So
they have a good team. And, in fact, the coach of Merrimack actually coached under Toll, interesting enough. Fun fact.
A cool, nice Andy Toole disciple coaching over at Merrimack.
Disciple.
Coaching tree.
Good word. I love disciple.
The coaching tree. But I think the Colonials can go there and definitely pull out a win. Central Connecticut, not quite sure. I think there's a possibility that early on the season could look pretty great because after that, four home games in a row against St. Francis, Brooklyn, Wagner, Merrimack, and Sacred Heart. How about Merrimack being thrown in there twice?
Yeah, getting those games out early on.
They get them out of the way.
Yeah.
You'll love to see it.
They don't play Mount St. Mary's till February 13th.
Duh.
So that's the
the marquee game.
Well, they don't play St. Francis. They play them twice in their last four games.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting how conference play is being done this year.
Good job, whoever made that schedule. Very, very diverse.
Nick, how do you think they're look heading into conference play?
I agree with what Austin said. I think the Merrimack game, they'll be able to pull out a victory. Central Connecticut State is up in the air for me. But, that homestand will hopefully be healthy healthy, helpful. Jeez.
And healthy would be
and
great.
Healthy. We hope they all have good health as well. Yes. Obviously, four straight home games in early conference play like that is very helpful, especially with the new arena. I mean, they had over 1,000 people come watch them play Geneva over a break. So, I mean, I think they'll get a good turnout for conference play, and I think that'll help in a very big way.
Robert Morris right now, just 2 wins on the year, non-conference, but they will be ending it, of course, again, just to recap the show. The big news, that DJ Russell transfer. Of course, he hasn't played much this year, so we are not expecting too much.
By the time
much
you hear
the team,
this, the article will be up.
It'll be yes. written. Go
the highly it. Anticipated article, as I'm about to click log in to Snow.
Who knows? Maybe you even clicked on this through the article.
Maybe.
Go maybe. Give Nick Hederick's article a read.
Give me
it's
some
well worth
reads.
It.
As I return to writing for the first time in 2 weeks.
That's all we have this week for the Toll Shed, possibly this semester of the Toll Shed. If we don't return next week, we'll see you next decade as the year comes
that.
To an end.
Yeah, that's going to mess in my head.
2020. Merry Christmas, even though Logan doesn't want to say it.
Happy Festivus, everyone. We'll see you guys next decade, if not next week.